Welcome back to TechNet Radio. Continuing their Private Cloud Basic series, Kevin Remde, Tom Schinder, and Yuri Diogenes are back, and in today's episode, they focus on how you can get started in planning a private cloud environment. Tune in as they lay out some best practices you may want to consider. Kevin, the mic is yours.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another Cloud Innovators Show on TechNet Radio, our series of cloud and business value interviews for IT managers. My name is Kevin Remde, and I'm a senior IT pro evangelist on the U.S. Developer and Platform Evangelism team here at Microsoft and your TechNet Radio host for today. Now, today's discussion is part three of a five-part private cloud series. In our first two discussions, we introduced the private cloud, plus we had a very good discussion with our guests on securing the private cloud. Today, we're going to focus on how to get started, on some best practices and patterns you might want to consider for planning your private cloud. And today with us again, we're very fortunate to have Tom Schinder and Yuri Diogenes. Welcome, gentlemen.
Hello, Kevin. Hey, Kevin.
Just a quick introduction of Tom and Yuri. Tom Schinder is a 15-year veteran of the IT industry. He began his IT career as a consultant. He's worked at many large companies and also went into a long career of writing. He's published over 30 books on Windows, Windows networking, Windows security, ISA server, threat management gateway. In fact, I have one of his ISA server books. I have a signed copy of your book, actually, Tom, that you did for me one time, so thank you for that. Tom joined Microsoft in December of 2009 as a member of the UAG Direct Access team and started the popular EdgeMan blog that covered UAG Direct Access. Tom's currently a principal knowledge engineer in the Server and Cloud Division, Information Experience Group, Solutions Group, and his primary focus now is private cloud, with a special interest in private cloud networking and security. Yuri Diogenes has been working in the IT field since 1994. He works for Microsoft as a senior technical writer in the Server and Cloud Division, Information Experience Group. And prior to joining the group, Yuri also worked in the Windows Security and worked at Microsoft CSS as a senior security support escalation engineer in the Forefront Edge security team. He's co-author of the Forefront TMG Administrator's Companion book for Microsoft Press, co-author of three other books about Forefront, UAG, TMG, and FPE, lots of acronyms there, from Microsoft Press, and also co-author of the Security Plus book, which is in Portuguese. Yuri holds several industry certifications and is working with Tom on a new book. Tom and Yuri are both writing a book on Windows Server 2012, Security from End to Edge and Beyond. I love the title. That's going to be published by Syngress in 2013. Tom and Yuri also host regular interviews. They make themselves available in their own series from End to Edge and Beyond, which is their security and private cloud video and blog series. Thank you so much for speaking with us again today.
Thanks for having us again.
You bet.
All right. So let's assume, as we get going here, that our listeners and viewers have embraced the private cloud as a valuable way to construct, to configure, to manage, and provide services for the businesses. So what's the next step?
Well, that's an excellent question, because there are a lot of ways you can go from the beginning, because a graph with one point can go in any direction. So what we recommend is, of course, you start with reading the general information about what cloud computing has to offer and how it might differ from a traditional data center. At that point, you're starting to get serious about private clouds, so you're going to think, well, I guess I should start investigating some of the options that are available to me. And so that really represents the beginning of your planning process. So when you're beginning to plan your private cloud, you're going to have to think about some core issues. And those issues are, what is your server compute infrastructure? What is your virtual machine compute infrastructure? What is your server storage infrastructure and your virtual machine storage infrastructure? And what is your server network and virtual machine networking infrastructure? So you start thinking about those things in your planning process, and you're going to start thinking about the myriad of options that are available, especially when we think about Windows Server 2012. So Windows Server 2012, as a foundation for your cloud infrastructure, provides you an almost limitless number of permutations. Now, That might sound daunting, but we're currently working on a collection of documents that's going to help you with that planning process, and it's going to be a cloud infrastructure planning guide that'll be out hopefully by the end of the year. So after you go through the planning and you start understanding the entire universe of options that are available to you, you're going to want to start your design process. And your design process is going to revolve around essentially what is the service capabilities that you want to offer your users, right? So you're going to define service classes such as types of virtual machines, small, medium, large, and extra large, what we call t-shirt sizes. And based on those t-shirt size virtual machines, you'll start making decisions about out of that entire universe of options that Windows Server 2012 makes available to you, which ones you will need to apply in order to meet the service levels that you're going to offer through a service catalog. And then, of course, is the deployment part. How are you going to deploy this design that you've created? Well, similarly with the planning, we will also create a deployment guide and a design guide to help you through that initial life cycle of envisioning your private cloud to actually deploying it. Now, so far I've only talked about the private cloud infrastructure that uses the Windows Server 2012 platform capabilities. Of course, you're going to need a fabric management controller. And who is the best fabric management controller out there today? System Center. System Center Virtual Machine Manager, System Center Service Manager, System Center Orchestrator, and Config Manager may have a place in there too. So after you plan and deploy, plan, design, and deploy your infrastructure, then you have to think about planning, designing, and deploying your fabric management controller. And that is a project that we have in mind for early next year.
So, and that's a really good start. I'm glad that you guys are coming out with some documentation to help people through the process. Certainly in considering ways to shape the environment and ways to kind of get their hands around it, because it can be a very daunting task otherwise. So having a roadmap
Absolutely.
Is very, very useful. And there's part of that that's organizational in many aspects, of course, because we have to not only take into account our own data center and our organization in that architecture, but also the organization as a whole. And there must be some considerations that organizations need to take into account. So how will these organizational considerations impact choices when planning to build a private cloud infrastructure?
Well, I think that the first and most important thing to understand is that private cloud is not a technology, not a set of technology, but rather than a new way to deliver information technology and services to end user, right? So you have to start thinking on the organization perspective even before you start mapping the technology and see what you're gonna do. So you really have to understand your company needs, what are the changes that are going to happen on people and process, and then come up with technology to solve the problem. So one step that you should do if you're planning for a private cloud is to take a look in the reference model that we have, the private cloud reference architecture, that is not vendor specific, but it gives you all the all the elements that you should take in consideration when planning the private cloud. It goes from the service deliver to the operations, to the management, to the infrastructure, and then to platform and software. So if you are dealing with service delivered, what are the implications on the financial management, on the lifecycle management, service level management, and capacity management? There is a series of elements that you must understand before you go deep into the technology, because most of the time, the main mistakes will happen because you're going to jump in and try to set up your private cloud like it was a traditional data center that you set up your roads, my file server, my print server, and I have all this, and now let me put to work. No, you have to step back and really plan every element, because it's not a change only in technology, it's a change on the process, and that's the way you're going to go, because you want to make sure that you've done the thing right. You got to remember that we got into this mess of data centers that we have today, because things were evolving, right? We were with IPX, XPS, then we go to TCP IP, then we go to network, and then we go to a bunch of things, one on top of the other. And we have this Frankenstein in front of us, having to talk with a bunch of other products. So now is the time to step back and really plan every component and see how to take advantage of this modularity that you have with private clouds to resolve the information technology issues as well as the business issues that you have.
Very good, very good. And you mentioned the topic of service delivery. So let's talk about that in the context of the private cloud. And before we even talk about that, remind our listeners what we mean when we say that, service delivery. And then share with us what are some important aspects that need to be considered when a business is planning their private cloud service delivery implementation.
Well, service delivery definitely is one of the key principles that I think separates the private cloud from a traditional data center. Now, sure, in a traditional data center, we are about delivering services. We provide the servers and the infrastructure to make it possible for line of business application owners to deploy their applications and provide the information that's needed to drive the business. But when we think about service delivery, we think in terms of being service providers rather than just providing an IT organization that does some core services. What that means is that when we take a service provider's approach, that we're setting us apart from our customers, and where we create explicit agreements in the form of service level agreements so that the consumers of our cloud service have certain expectations of us that are explicit, and that if we don't meet the expectations as set forth in our SLAs, that there are compensations that can be made in order to provide what the consumer of the service needs, and also to help us in our process of continuous improvement. Now, key issues in service delivery then, and there are nine of them that I can think of right off the top of my head here. One is financial management. Okay, in terms of financial management, we have to be able to come up with a cost model so that we know how much it costs to provide compute, storage, and networking resources to the consumers of our service. And we have to make those costs transparent to the consumers, the people that we're providing the cloud resources for. There's also demand management. We have to be able to measure demand upon the entire cloud service. So compute, networking, and storage, again, we have to see where thresholds might be set, where we're going to have to be able to provide more infrastructure to meet our service level agreements. Then, of course, there's a business relationship management that goes back to the SLAs and communications with the consumers of our cloud service. They have expectations of us, and we have to make sure those expectations are explicit and that both sides understand in the same way what those expectations are. Then, of course, the service catalog. This goes into one of the five core tenets of cloud computing, in that we want our consumers of the cloud service to be able to self-service, to not have to go through any kind of human intervention to get the resources they need. And we do that by creating a self-service portal that surfaces our service catalog so people can choose network, compute, storage, maybe some value-added services like virtual machine monitoring and other service monitoring. Then there's the service lifecycle management. You know, we have to be able to upgrade our infrastructure in a way that's transparent to our users. We have to make sure that all the infrastructure components are up to date and the fabric controller systems are up to date without any interruption of service. Then there's service level management. Now, we need to be able to determine if we are meeting those SLAs. So we have to have systems in place that can either confirm or deny that we are meeting those service level agreements. This continuity and availability management, well, the cloud is about being always on, and we do this through a certain level of redundancy and a greater level of software-based resiliency so that cloud services are always continuously available, and that in the case of a disaster, the cloud service provider, which is us in a private cloud, internal IT providing a private cloud, that we have well-designed disaster recovery and business continuity plans in place. There's capacity management that goes to the fact that we have to make sure that we're able to withstand blips in requests, like around Christmas, for example, or tax time, where we may have to have extra capacity available in the form of reserve capacity, or reserve capacity in the event that maybe we lose a fault domain, an upgrade domain, or some other resource domain. And then finally, there's information security management. We have to make sure that we have plans in place to secure our infrastructure and perhaps consider some sort of security value adds for the consumer of our cloud services. So those are just a few of the key issues in the service delivery aspect in private cloud.
So once we have these all listed out, we have an idea of how we're going to implement them. Many of them having to do with tracking, and certainly in monitoring, and then addressing issues as they arise. You know, being able to automate something like that is, of course, going to be very valuable. And in the same way, the simple filling in the basic work that we do, even just to simply fulfill a request for that self-service, the person going into the service catalog, making a request based on who they are and what they can do, and then that request being fulfilled through some amount of work. Mm-hmm. Well, that amount of work hopefully will be automated. And so let's talk about the topic of automation. I want to know what your take is on that. Should everything be automated or not?
That's a good point, because one of the essential characteristics of the cloud computing is rapid elasticity, and many of the elasticity that you're going to achieve on a cloud, you're going to have to automate things because you want to minimize human involvement in many aspects. Incident management is something that you want to automate. You don't want to receive an email in the middle of the night say, hey, well, I'm going to run out of resource, because when you plan your private cloud, you gave that impression of infinite resource, infinite capacity, and now I'm running out of disk space. So you need to make sure that you have automation in background to prevent things like that to happen. There are many essential characteristics in a cloud computing that will only be able to be done using automation. And that also helps to minimize basic incident, because cloud operators, cloud administrators, they tend to make mistakes. They are humans, so there will be mistakes. You want to automate also to avoid downtime. So there are a lot of benefits in automate, but there is also a trade-off. So for example, you're going to maximize resilience, but automation may not resolve root cause of the problem. So when you automate something, you are not treating the problem. You are making sure that your resilience is up to date and that is not affecting your tenants, right? But what about the root cause? What really caused that? You need to have in place some process to go back and say, okay, this was automatic, fixed by the system, but why this happened? Now I need to track down the issue and understand why it happens so it doesn't happen anymore, right? So automation will not resolve root cause analysis. This is something that you still have to do. You're going to take benefits of automation by having less staff required for incident management and activities, but this also has a trade-off. It may mask underlying problems. Again, when you automate things, things will start to run in a way that if you are not diligent to review the logs, to review the events, to review what's going on, you just think that, hey, I just built a perfect infrastructure and there is no issue going on, mm-hmm. right? So you have to have some process in place to start reviewing every single incident and treat as a normal incident, that it happens because it's supposed to happen, or something that down the road might cause a bigger issue, right? So you have to have that human analysis and human troubleshooting happening in background. So be diligent, having process in place to do root cause analysis and to understand what's going on is very important. So to answer your question, automation is a key characteristic. It's very important. It must help in order to implement some of the characteristics of cloud computing. But this does not mean that everything 100% will be automated and you're going to be okay with that.
So not actually verifying and checking and doing your due diligence there is along the lines of setting up a backup and then forgetting to actually check or restore, or having a disaster recovery plan in place and not actually testing it.
Right, that's a classic example. That's absolutely correct.
So in a traditional data center, and I'm kind of getting to the topic of what you mentioned briefly there about this notion that we have infinite resources, and I think that's a beautiful thing about a private cloud is that it gives our users and our businesses the sense that really they can request anything they want, anything they need, and the capacity should be able to adjust on the fly and handle it. But that brings up then the topic of capacity planning. So traditionally we are doing our capacity planning during this planning phase of our project. We're making a best guess over time how much we're going to actually need, and we buy all of it. Does that work the same in the private cloud, or does that change very much? And I'm wondering, you know, again, does this notion of infinite resources really apply here? Is that even possible?
Well, I think that's one of the most challenging aspects of private cloud. In contrast to public cloud, where there's typically massive resources available to over-provision the environment, that's not the case in a private cloud environment because budgets are much more constricted and controlled, and you have lead times that you have to deal with as well. So the way we're thinking about the best way of approaching this is to begin with a small pilot project first, where you define a scale unit, essentially a compute scale unit, which might be a half rack or maybe even a full rack of servers if you want to go all in at the beginning, and start your private cloud with that scale unit. Then what you would do is you would define your service classes, your VMs, and the best way I think you could do it is to decide what percentage of each service class do you want to provide, and then look at the how many VMs you want to be able to support in that scale unit. The amount of memory then that would be required to support the number of VMs based on the percentage of each of those types of VMs as defined by your service classes would define essentially how many VMs you can run in your scale unit. So once you get the scale unit going and you get everything provisioned and set up and you have your users actually start using it, you then start monitoring the performance and the utilization at the compute, networking, and storage levels. And what you'll do is you'll see how long does it take you to max out that scale unit. And then you'll look at those curves and you'll say, okay, it takes from a week or 2 weeks ago between 80% utilization to 100% utilization. So that gives me a week or two lead time to requisition another scale unit and then get it set up and deployed as part of the private cloud. And this is something that you just don't do once. You have to keep doing it because you know once you make a service available and people hear how great it is, then there's going to be an acceleration in the use of the cloud's infrastructure that you're providing folks. This is especially true with infrastructure as a service. And we're talking about infrastructure as a service or VMs for rent. You'll need to maybe put some governors on that usage by setting usage policies, like a certain group is only allowed so X number of VMs and or only allowed a X amount of memory or storage or compute. And the good news is a System Center Virtual Machine Manager will allow you to create those kind of policies so that you don't end up with VM sprawl and overutilization of the cloud infrastructure.
Very good. Yeah, having proper tools to help support that is going to be a good thing. But even before that, as you say, it's good to have a good process in place to actually plan it out, to consider in manageable chunks where, you know, how can we do this allocation, and over time, you know, based on previous performance, previous capacity usage, and all those different aspects of our fabric, being able to determine, okay, here's what we expect in the future. And then I like your note about the fact that, yes, things do change, and certainly as it becomes popular, people become comfortable with the infrastructure and being able to take advantage of it, they will, and that's a good thing. So let's wrap up our talk today by leaving our listeners and our viewers with a little bit more information about how they can find out more about planning. Can you give us some pointers or some URLs, some suggestions for searching on content to help them address the issue of planning?
Sure. We're going to put on the screen right now some of the links that we do recommend customers to go out and check. One is the Plan a Private Cloud document that we have at TechNet. It goes from the PIPN process planning phase to the private cloud reference architecture that I just mentioned before. And many of the things that you're going to have on this page, we'll link to our TechNet Week article that goes from the reference model to down into service delivery, operation management, infrastructure, platform, and software. So each one of those elements, you're going to have a planning just for that. So for example, if you want to deep dive into the service delivery, we have a private cloud planning guide for service delivery, which is quite amazing, because you can go and start planning in different areas of your private cloud. So we're going to put on the screen some of those links so the audience can take a look on that.
Excellent. Very good. Well, and we'll also put those URLs up on the page, the landing page where you find this video, so you should be able to have those for your reference as well. Tom and Yuri, thank you again so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Kevin.
And we'll see you next time on TechNet Radio Cloud Innovators.